I'm going to take you somewhere today to one main and clear message with only about four words in it, which answers the question of what to do when you feel powerless to help. And I'm going to give you three concrete things to do that fall under this four-word umbrella. But per usual, I'm going to take you there via a series of true stories, which I believe all still add up to the same equation: the answer to feeling powerless and wanting to help. So if you felt powerless to help, if you see suffering and don't know what to do about it, I hope you join me on today's podcast ride. I hope it lights a candle in your heart.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.
Do you crave clarity and insight? Do you sense that your intuition is trying to tell you important things, but you have a hard time trusting it? Do you want access to your own internal wisdom and to understand how it operates so that you can guide your life in ways that are meaningful and satisfying? Well then, welcome. I'm glad you are here. I'm your host, Aimée Cartier. I've been a professional psychic since around 2007. I'm the author of the book Getting Answers, Using Your Intuition to Discover Your Best Life. I've been teaching others to understand and use their own intuitive and empathic abilities for more than a decade. Join me each week for true stories and tools that will inspire you to take seriously your own inner knowing, that internal sense that you have uniquely tailored to you and designed to not only set you on the roads that are best for you, but also help you avoid the ones that are treacherous. It's time for you to own your intuition.
Welcome. For those of you who are just tuning in or discovering the Own Your Intuition show, I want to tell you that on my website or in the show notes, you will find lots of freebies, including the first part of my book for free. My book is called Getting Answers, Using Your Intuition to Discover Your Best Life. You will also find a download about how to tell if it is your intuition speaking. If you are empathic, you'll maybe be interested in a download about how to tell if what you are feeling belongs to you, or my 44 signs you are an empath. Lots of goodies to start your new year. See my website or the show notes if you are in the mood for some, and know that you are welcome here. I have a friend who had a near-death experience. As she was leaving her body on an operating table, something stopped her and very specifically told her, "Go back. These people need you." It was specific advice for specific people in her life. When she was on her way back to her body, or just after she landed back in, a series of events from her life flashed before her eyes. And one of the things she saw was a casual comment that she made at one point or another to a person that hurt them. To her surprise, she also discovered that the degrees she had, the schooling she had attained, and this is someone who overcame great obstacles and challenges to make her schooling and degrees happen. They were hard wrought. But she discovered that in the end, they didn't matter. What she concluded from this experience, from all of these images she saw from her life, and poignantly, this very casual and small moment from her life about a comment was, it matters how we treat others and how we show up. Our actions matter. What we do matters. The other day, I saw a short video that the writer Danielle Laporte put out. It was a commentary on hearing an interview with this Hollywood bajillionaire, as she called him, who had said that he had lots of money, but his kids didn't, and so they weren't going to get anything. She made some poignant points about her perspective on parenting and money and parenting, on generosity, and asked for others to chime in with their thoughts in the comments. I had thoughts, so I wrote them. And what I wrote is relevant to where I'm going today. So I'm going to read you what I wrote. It has to do with children and how I endeavor to raise them, but it also has to do with the world and a story that we never hear sung, despite its prevalence. I wrote, agree 100%. I just said the same thing 3 days ago. It's not my job to teach my children how life works. It's my job to help them learn to healthily regulate their nervous system so that they can be, do, and learn whatever they are here to be, do, and learn. Furthermore, I'd rather they learn from our relationship that there is support, kindness, and love available in this world. That's what I'd like to gift as a parent. This world can be brutal for sure, but it's also true that nature, including ourselves, are regenerative. How about more lessons on the miracle of that instead of the dog-eat-dog Darwinian idea that we grew up on and are continually fed through the media? Good people helping and caring for others are just as present and probably more so as the schmucks. They just don't make headlines. This is Aimé Cartier, and you are listening to the Own Your Intuition show if you just tuned in. And today I am, through stories, leading us all to an idea with concrete suggestions of what we can do when we feel powerless to help. My comment on Danielle's Instagram is relative to this topic and the feeling of being helpless, because disturbing images and headlines and knowings are thrown around the internet. They help us see the places in the world that do need help, the tears in the collective, and they matter. And by and large, they make us feel helpless and afraid and powerless and paralyzed. But these images, the onslaught of news and stories we hear, also show us only one side of the picture. No one, or such an infinitesimal amount compared to the whole, is talking about the good and generous and kind and lovely and helpful things that we are doing for each other. For the people we know, for our neighbors, for our beloveds, for our family, for each other. We don't know about those. They don't make headlines. So we have all these people in the world being bombarded with intense and disturbing images, genocide here, cruelty there, decimating storms over there, and then concluding that that is all there is, and that we are helpless and stuck in this extremely dark place and world. And I'll tell you, it does feel dark, but I want to highlight for you also not only a few things you can do to counter this darkness, and I'll get to that in a bit, but also first, that you are only hearing part of the story. you are only hearing one thread, one loud and terrible melody of humanity's song. One loud and terrible melody of humanity's song. Just scan your mind right now. Think of how you feel when you hear these things. Think about everyone you know and how they feel when they hear those things. Good people sitting around thinking that there is no good in this world, when the majority of people are good people. They are doing their best in this world, hopefully living by their values, hopefully being kind to the grocery checker, maybe growing vegetables in the summer and giving some to their friends, or donating to a cause they care about, or helping their friends when they need a hand, or even just sitting on their phone feeling helpless and hopeless about the terror. That's a good person whose actions do not make headlines. I can't think of a single person I know who does not fall into this category. I can't think of a single person I know who is sitting around plotting great demise and cruelty to others. Can you? So let's just open our eyes to the story that is not being told, to the many stories of kindness and generosity, of well-wishing, of prayers, of goodness that also exist right now in this world. I believe it's an overwhelming majority. And then let's step that up a bit in response. Here's what I mean. Remember my friend and her near-death experience? She was shown an offhanded comment that she made to someone once that affected this person in a negative way. The point is not to nosedive into all of the crappy things you have done, because we have all done them. I'll give you an example from my own life that is relevant to this subject today. I wrote a blog post once about what I call my a-hole meter, only I used the whole A word because that's what I do in my mind. I'm just not going to do that on the radio. I actually think using this word is what got my blog blacklisted in China. My cousin, at least for a time, I don't know if it still is, but my cousin was living there at the time and suddenly she couldn't get onto my blog to read it. Or maybe it's because I'm a psychic. I don't know. Anyway, I digress. My a-hole meter is something I developed, I don't know, I can't remember now, but I think I was in my 30s, because I noticed two patterns in my life. One happened early on. Here's an example. When I was in high school, I can remember just being mean to this guy who worked at Pizza Hut with me when I was a teenager. I don't know what I said. I wasn't like outwardly and ambitiously cruel to him, but he bugged me. And so in conversation, when something came up, I wouldn't hold back on flippant or sarcastically mean comments. Eventually, for one reason or another, again, the details of all this are foggy. Like, I can't even remember his name, actually, but I do remember this. But I was wound up in teenage, everything about me, and I think I know how the world works, even though I barely scratched the surface of experiences I'm going to have. That kind of teenage energy. In any case, for one reason or another, over time, I came to really respect this guy, who for a long time really bugged me. And just to clarify, he didn't bug me. I was just bugged by him. I don't even remember why I found him annoying. He didn't do anything to me. After that happened, after I gained respect and appreciation for him, I thought about how I had treated him, and I was like, wow, I was really an a-hole. Throughout time in my early life, this happened repeatedly to me. I would not like somebody. I would be flippant and disregarding of their feelings. Eventually, I would grow to like and respect them, and I would feel remorseful about how I had acted. That was the first pattern I noticed. Once I recognized it, I started to assume that if I really knew anything about that person, I would probably really like and respect them, or feel compassion at the very least. And really, I started to understand that just because I felt a certain way at a certain moment didn't mean it was true for all time, nor did it mean that they deserved to be treated jerkily by me or anyone else. And I also noticed this other phenomenon, that when I let my mouth go off at the handle, I usually regretted it. Regardless of whether anyone else cared or not about what I had said, I did. And I began to notice I actually spent a great deal of psychic energy regretting my actions or comments. Like a comment that took me less than a second to pop out could cost me 3 days or more ruminating about it and regretting saying it. Noticing these patterns, I started to put into place what I call my a-hole meter. In this equation, I was the a-hole. So even when I was really angry, I would refrain from the snappy, mean, or just junk comment that I wanted to make. Like, it was so on the surface of my tongue. Even in situations where I was boiling to make the comment, like boiling mad, I taught myself to refrain. My favorite and most memorable time of my a-hole meter in action happened at the last place I ever waited tables. That night, it was me and one other waitress working. At the beginning of the evening, the dining room manager, who also happened to be the owner, did something she had never done before. Instead of assigning every other table to the two of us wait staff alternately, she gave the other waitress 3 tables in a row while I literally didn't have a single customer to wait on. The third time it happened, I was boiling. I don't remember what I wanted to say, thank God. What I do remember was that after she gave the 3rd table in a row to the other wait person, meanwhile, I was literally just standing there with nothing to do, my whole entire body started to vibrate with anger. I was so mad. I was standing right next to the owner, manager, when she told the other waitress that she should take this table too. Something junky and caustic was itching to come out of my mouth. It was like spinning around on my tongue, and I was completely overridden by a feeling of anger. I am certain my face flushed with it. My whole body probably flushed with it. The emotion was so intense. But I applied my a-hole meter, which in my case just amounts to me keeping my mouth shut, like locking it down with a zipper and a key, even though I have a comment whirling around in there. Vibrating with anger, I zipped my mouth, turned on my heel, and walked out of the back door of the restaurant instead to give myself a minute to recover and to stomp or something so that I could let the anger out of my body in a more constructive way. After I growled and stomped and shook my body and WTF'd alone on the back patio of the restaurant, I went back in. A few minutes later, the owner caught up with me. She said, "I know it seems crazy that I'm giving the other person all these tables and you nothing, but just trust me on this. I have reason to believe that a whole gaggle of women are coming in shortly. They are going to sit here in the lounge, drinking and enjoying themselves all evening. The tips will be amazing. The work will be even less. And the other waitress will get all the tables she needs before she heads home, since she was on the early shift." Boy, can I tell you how grateful I was that I had kept my mouth shut tight. Same as the experiences where when I was young, I noticed that people who rubbed me the wrong way just by existing would eventually become people I respected and appreciated. I also noticed that making junky comments as they arose didn't ever work for me. It haunted me, and it cost me every time. So the a-hole meter was born. Okay, I'm coming to a point here. There is a lot of junk in the world. I have been teaching empaths for years. Empaths are people who feel the feelings of other people in their own skin, as though it is happening to them. When I first started teaching empaths, there was a global or a national extreme experience in the collective like once every 6 years or so. I'm making that number up, but they were few and far in between. They seem to slowly speed up over time until now they seem to be once a month or so, or even every week. I conclude that we have many systems set up in our society that no longer work. Systems based on erroneous or unjust systems, systems that served a few at one point, but do not serve the collective. I conclude, as I always conclude, that remaking the quilt is necessary, the quilt of our society, the fabric of it. Nevertheless, since empaths feel the feelings of other people, they have a tendency to take responsibility for all the problems. I remember a student who told our class that for years, she would make hats or fundraise or try to find some way to solve the problems or contribute to the issue whenever she saw something terrible happened or an injustice in the world. She took every problem in the world as her own. This is something empaths do frequently because we feel so deeply. Or my empath students who make themselves sick by inhaling all of the toxic exhaust of a problem they are not responsible for solving. And they would get so in knots about the whole thing, about the terrible thing that existed or was existing, that they would be unable to function properly in their own lives. They and their nervous systems would be totally fried from this challenge that existed in the world, one in which they could not solve, that they couldn't even show up properly for their own people or in their own lives and circumstances. They were paralyzed or pummeled by their grief or anger or helplessness. It's intense to feel things, to feel all the things if you're an empath. But the truth is, and this goes for empathic and non-empathic people alike, only some problems are yours to manage or contribute to. It's just the way it is. Whether you feel them deeply or not, it is no one's job to solve all of them. We each have a role to play. So I taught my empath students to ask, is it my place to help? Whenever they came upon a challenge or a problem or a difficult experience that anyone around them was having or something they knew existed in the world. And this is not a form of bypassing, as I hear bantered around these days. This is a form of staying authentic and true about your reach. If you are asking yourself, is this my place to help? You will get authentic responses. Sometimes the answer will be yes, in which case you will fundraise or elicit conversation or volunteer or bring a meal or what have you. Other times the answer will be no, and you'll know that your life force is necessary for other battles or needed in other ways right now. And if you follow these authentic inner yeses and nos related to whether it is your place to help right here, right now, you will find yourself easily staying in what I call right relationship. You'll be weighing in where you can make a difference, be it on a small or large scale. You'll be making the differences you can make. But here is the boon, the beautiful thing that is relevant to the time we are living in, that came out of these discussions and of this question, which I still advise for everyone. I had a student who, by nature of the work she did in schools, rubbed up against almost daily situations that were brutal and heartbreaking. When she started applying what I taught her, which was first to let the emotion out of her body, to let it move through her, to totally give it time and space to exist and for her to feel it, but to do so at appropriate times. So, for example, when she got home from school, she would allow herself to collapse on her couch in a pit of deep emotion about what had come across her path that day. Then, secondly, always be asking herself in each situation, is it my place to help here? Like, was this situation right now hers to help? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. There is no formula. It is a case-by-case situation, or even a moment-to-moment inquiry. In my experience. In any case, in my empath class, we also talked about what to do, what is available to us when you discover that this particular challenge is not yours to help. And this student of mine came up with this gorgeous formula. She discovered that when she felt sad or bewildered or angry or depressed or outraged or any number of crackling feelings about what was happening in the world, when she felt these things and she discovered that in this case, it was not her place to help, she discovered that she could use this same energy of wanting to do something to ameliorate the situation, of wanting to do good. She could use this same energy for those around her instead. When she came up with a hard no about someone else or some other situation, in terms of it being her place to help, it didn't mean that she couldn't offer up some goodness somewhere else. That brings me back again to my friend with a near-death experience. She told me that what she saw, the series of moments of her life that flashed before her eyes during this experience, caused her to understand that what we do and say to others matters. How we act toward one another. In fact, it might possibly be the only thing that matters. This is Aimée Cartier, and if you just joined us, we are talking about what to do when you feel powerless. And here is where the rubber hits the road. Okay, so if you feel powerless in one situation, maybe because you are, do something that is powerful and kind for another situation. Do it for those around you. If you can't help that particular tragedy or solve that beloved's problem or find it's not your place to do so, use that energy of wanting to help, wanting to ameliorate by doing something kind where you are for someone you know or someone you don't know. If it all matters, then it all matters. Also, another aspect that is clear to me is this. If we all dive into the horrors that exist, that horrible and terrible song thread of humanity, then who is around to bring the light? If slowly but surely every light is snuffed out like candles around the world from looking straight into the heart of all this darkness, how will we find our way out? And I don't have any scientific proof for this, but I can tell you it is very clear to me on an energetic, psychic, and spiritual level that being a light holder is very important, especially in a darkened world. So, if you are feeling helpless, if you discover it is not your place to help this fight, this challenge, then there are still several things you can do. One is to make attempts not to create more garbage in the world, to use the a-hole meter. So in my case, shut it and not make that snarky comment if it arises. Two, to do whatever it takes to brighten your light, to widen your range of influence, meaning the brighter your light, the more it shines, the farther it shines on others. Remember, if all the candles go out, no one will be able to see. And it feels like we are in danger of that since we have this continuous onslaught of terrible news in the world, and one in which we are in touch with daily, hourly, minute by minute, with a whole world of experience that is often beyond our range of influence. It's a one-sided headline-selling or sometimes just truth-telling situation, but one that only tells one slice of the people and experience pie. It's dimming us constantly. So do what you can. Do what self-care or what self-tending is needed so that you can brighten the lives of yourself and those around you, so that you can feel the generosity, the magic, the goodness, the regenerative wonder in this world, because it exists and it matters. Your light matters. And then, thirdly, via my student, I'll call her Kay, use that energy of wanting to ameliorate, make better, or do something for someone you know, someone around you. Show up with goodness and maybe even over the top or unexpected goodness for the people your life touches. I had a friend the other day who brought me flowers, a woman who also happens to be an alumni of my programs and is still circling with me as some of my alumni do for our new and full moon gatherings. I had shared something that had been challenging me lately. So she stopped over to my house with a bouquet. It's a small thing, but when I look at it on my counter, it's a bright spot in my spirit, an acknowledgement, an act of love. Acts of love matter. That is my four-word message. Acts of love matter. If you can't solve the whole thing, or it's not your place to help, you can still do something. Keep your mean comments to yourself, brighten your own light, do crazy, kind, surprising things for others. Execute acts of love for yourself, for others. It matters. This is Aimée Cartier, and you've been listening to the Own Your Intuition show. I hope it made a difference in your life today. I hope it lit a candle in your heart that will guide you and shine on others. If it is as important to you as it is to me, I hope you make a difference where you can. I hope you tend to your own light. I'd love to hear about what thoughts, ideas, or actions this inspired in you. You can find me at Aimée Cartier on Instagram or send me a message through my website, aimeecartier.com. If you are moved to join me in the circles I hold, guide, and facilitate in order for you to deeply feel your own inner guidance and goodness, you can also find out more about my work on my website or through all the links in my show notes. All my love.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.